So that was our first intervention within this 1 hour time slot. There are a total of three. The other two that are listed is Diana Sterling, who will talk about ways of thinking in art and science, and the third one is Matthew Dukes, children's perception of health in a developing country context. May I invite Diana to come forward and enjoy her 20 minutes of fame.
That's five more than I thought. That was a lot.
Oh, great.
By Andy Warhol. I feel like my presentation is still evolving. Not because I haven't prepared, but because in all the discussions this morning and ideas, I feel like I've learned so much even just in this short time. And that I feel that the great wealth of perspective exists in you. So I do have some ideas to share, and I also invite your participation. I'd like to ask, first of all, how many of you have been trained in any kind of visual art or practice any kind of visual art just for your own enjoyment or maybe professionally, please? Okay, this is great. So I'm going to talk about my experience and my perspective, and I invite you also to share your experience and perspective. And so I'm not a scientist, but I'll explain how I feel. Maybe I can talk about this scientific mindset a little bit from my artist's background. How many of you are scientists? Maybe there's some other way. The definition is up to you. I don't have a definition for that. So, how do you see yourself? Because when I think this question about what is the scientific mind is really the essential question. And it seems to me, in thinking about it, this is where I am in my thinking right now. It's a kind of a mindset that's probably a combination of maybe a natural predisposition that may be partially personal, it might be partially social or the context of a person's culture, and also partially a result of training in schools and maybe choice of career or profession. And I would say that all of the mindsets that we're going to talk about are combinations of those things. And often maybe we are drawn to certain professions or certain kinds of training because of our personal predisposition. So, but I don't think they are exclusive of one another. And that's kind of the essence of what I want to talk about. I am a nonlinear thinker, as you can see by my notes. So I'm going to talk about ways of thinking. And
Diana, could you speak just a shade louder?
Yes. And what I mean by thinking is, just for the sake of this discussion, because that's a whole other colloquium, what's thinking. But what I mean is ways of conceptualizing, of problem solving, and communicating ideas, and experiences and conjectures. This ties in with the previous speaker's idea of storytelling, maybe, in a sense. So ways of thinking, which means ways of conceptualizing, problem solving, communicating, and understanding ideas, experiences, and conjectures. How does that feel? Does that seem right? Can we go with that just for this? Okay. So, what are some ways of thinking by that definition? Ways of conceptualizing. How do you think? Do you think very visually? When you're solving a problem, Do you, maybe you're trained as a mathematician, do you use mathematics for understanding? Do you use language? Do you talk to yourself? Do you talk to other people?
Yeah.
All of those things. Yes.
I think in the mathematical sciences, the vision of the equations is very essential. You need to write them down and to look at them in order to go on to the next step. There was one time a mathematician called Euler who was totally blind and in his old age and who produced very wonderful results, although he was blind. But he wrote his equations on the board and he had his assistants to tell him and in that way still had the picture of what he was doing in front of him. Also his memory was very phenomenal. But I do think that vision is important in mathematical science.
Okay.
Hawking also struggled with the
Yes.
I think a lot of what I or my colleagues do in social science is drawing from theory and research we know, creating conceptual frameworks about whatever it is we might be doing, which often involves enabling practitioners to put the most up-to-date social science into practice. And so it's creating a conceptual map. So that clusters some of the theories that enable them to see the relationship between that theory and if they're a teacher, how they would apply it in the school system, or how a social worker might apply it in what he or she is doing. And without that framework, it becomes a very distorted, messy way to build capacity.
So when you, are you talking about this kind of a thing? Well, a neater one?
No, it really answers your question, how do you go about thinking?
So what is the conceptual
problem? And it's creating this conceptual orientation for a new field that might be interdisciplinary that then gives a shared way to apply it.
So how is the concept communicated? Is it visually or
thematically? Thematically in a diagrammatically, okay. That's the word. But it's not solarized in mathematical equations in a way. It definitely is verbally and thematically.
Okay. Yes.
I think we have to be very careful about thinking about the doing of science and the understanding of science.
Okay.
And the danger of taking the fact that brains are different and that some exceptional brains that have particular combination of components allow some emergent skill that average people don't have. Right?
Okay.
And therefore, to use that as a model for the scientific brain, I think, is a dead end.
Okay.
And so if we want to focus on the majority of people, and we're not going to become scientists, but there are people who are great that can understand science,
mm-hmm.
then I think it's a completely different process, because they may not have all those skills that you're talking about
right.
that would enable them to be the originators of
science. Okay, this is
science.
A very good point. Okay,
in fact, to amplify that, it is not only to discover, Peter was saying this, but to reinforce that much of what they do actually may be scientific. In fact, it's about reinforcing some of the problem solving and helping people appreciate, actually, much as Paul was saying, mm-hmm. that it's an inherently human process.
Okay. And so, one thing I heard you say, Peter, was that conceptualizing might not be the same as communicating.
And understanding may not be the same as creating.
And understanding may not be the same as creating.
We've got to be very careful that the hero, creative scientist, becomes our model for the scientific mind. Or for creating a scientific mind.
Okay. So, and then this idea of everybody has the capability of thinking scientifically, and I would argue also thinking...
I don't know if that's true.
Do you think?
I'm not sure it's true. I've had some students that I think may not be able to think
scientifically.
And they can think other ways, though. They can think beautiful other ways.
Okay, all right.
I just wanted to interject another remark along the lines of what John was saying. There's a famous statement by mathematical physicist Paul Dirac. If your equations look beautiful,
right.
then they're on the right lines.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
So the kind of aesthetic component.
So
it works for him. So does everybody have this kind of aesthetic sense? I don't know. So, and also it's kind of anecdotal that Einstein did his thought experiments. He was very visually adept. And the great thing about thought experiments is they're free. And it's easy to change the parameters if you have that capability. And so I just have a short time, and I want to just talk about a couple of other ideas. So things that I heard from you also supported kind of notes I'd made to myself, which were some ways of thinking are linguistic ways of thinking. There are kinesthetic ways of thinking, visual ways of thinking, and I think typically we do these things simultaneously. Auditory, which can be tied to language and also tied to music. And so what I want to talk about just briefly is maybe how the practice of art, and this is more like a question or suggestion, might inform this support what goes on in scientific thinking, with the emergence of the scientific mind. And I met a man recently whose name is Martin Gardner, and he does research with young students learning to play music, and he follows up with whether that influences their math ability. And he has the idea of, rather than transfer, he talks about mental stretching. And mental stretching involves, he argues against transfer because the context is so different from one situation to another, that he says it's not really transfer, but can the brain see some sort of apropos relationship and make connections? And he argues that yes, that's true. So if he's right about that, there are three areas that I think that visual training in the visual arts, specifically drawing and painting, might support the emergence of a scientific mind. And I'd like your feedback about this. One is, to me, this is really critical, conceptualizing the relationships between things. And I think that often we are very event or single incident oriented. And it comes from that, I heard you talking about at lunch, this kind of cause and effect orientation. But in drawing, for those of you who have drawing training, we are taught to look at the negative. We're taught to look at what isn't there. And by drawing what isn't there, what is there emerges. And so I think this becomes a sort of aspect of the artistic mindset, seeing not only what is there, but what isn't there, and this interrelationship and the ever-changing nature of those relationships between what is and what isn't, what's positive and what's negative, and so on. I think this can support scientific thinking, enabling one to look from another point of view. Secondly, I think in drawing, no matter how realistic a drawing appears, there's abstraction involved. And some drawings are much more abstract than others, like painting. I think this is abstraction as extracting the essence of something. I think this ability to see and extract the essence might be a skill that, with mental stretching, could be applied to developing the scientific mind. What is the essence of this? What is the essence? And then the last one is the ability to create and to perceive patterns, which I think pattern recognition is vital in every area of endeavor. And it's kind of innate in humans to recognize patterns, but I think the development of that can support both mathematical and scientific thinking as well as artistic thinking. So I have only about 2 minutes, and what I'd like to invite you to do, if you'd like, is one of my primary ideas is that For example, if I learn many different languages, then I have a way of seeing the experience of being human through many different lenses. And you never know when one of those lenses is going to help you solve a problem that maybe you couldn't have solved otherwise. In fact, even speaking of just language, at the hotel where I'm staying, there's a deaf man who is deaf. And I don't speak Dutch, but I speak American Sign Language, which is different than deaf sign language. But I found that because I do know sign language in some, from some culture, I have a kind of expanded mindset and understanding of the organization of language visually and spatially. And I found that he and I had a more active, engaging discussion than he was able to have with the other Dutch people who couldn't understand his speech. So you just never know when an alternate perspective or mindset might help you solve a problem in your particular field. So, with that in mind, if you're interested, and we don't have time now, but maybe on your own time, what I'd like you to do is just look at these kind of problems that I've invented. And what I would challenge you to do is to choose the problem on there that you would find the most difficult to solve. And then I would challenge you to solve it. So, just briefly, the first one is just like a word problem. You have a 2/3 cup measure and a water source and a large bowl, and you need exactly 8.5 cups of water. Can you solve that without using your written math? And if you're a mathematician, maybe you can't stop your mind from doing it. This is a pattern: red, green, blue, green, red, blue, green, yellow. So how would you extend that by five color processes? Is it color processes? Color intensity? Explain, if you're a teacher, you can do this probably easily, so you wouldn't choose this. A+B² without using that symbols. Move from point A to point B in the room without walking, so you might choose, like, this is point A, and this is point B. How would you traverse the space without walking? So this requires a different way of thinking, maybe, than your normal way of thinking. Wish me a happy birthday without using sound. It's not my birthday, but... And then how would you wish a deaf and blind person? So those are just some things to think about, and the point being that this kind of creativity and ability to switch perspectives is something that I think is inherent in artistic training and also supports the emergence of scientific training.
Okay. Thank you so much, Diana. You gave us much food for thought again. And I'm sure people will try that. Particularly interested in going from A to B without what?
Walking.
Without walking. The next